Welcome, everybody, to Midday Magazine for this Tuesday, September 10th, 2024. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here, and we're having Let's Talk Real Estate time. It's our friends, Coldwell Banker, Sierra Realtors. We have David Farnborough with us. David, good to see you.
It's great to be with you, James. Just blown in from the Windy City, spent a few days in Chicago, and of course, one of the things I did there was look at all the architecture and take dozens of pictures, as you can imagine. And that's sort of what we're talking about today.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this topic, and I did not know you were going to start there. I obviously am very biased about that city. It is my city. I love that city. But I will say, I've been around a bunch of America here, and just in the States. I've never been outside of the States. But I got to say that the architecture in Chicago stands above so many. It is really unique. It is really interesting what they were able to do there. And the rebirth of that city as well. Some of the architecture there is from that era and everything, and even some of it before that era. It's just fascinating. I love that area. And my uncle was an architect, and take me around the city looking at the Hancock and some of these buildings and just talking about the way that they were built on that land in particular, which is a whole other story. So
You're absolutely right. And what we decided to do, James and I, we talked about this a couple of shows ago. We wanted to do something perhaps a little less dry than some of the real estate things that we normally discuss. And so we're going to be talking about the difference between houses in London, which is where I'm from, and houses that we might find in Wisconsin. Now, talking about Chicago, that's actually is a quite good place to start, because you know that a lot of what dictates the construction style is the history, the materials available, and the vision. And I found that when you look at some of those early skyscrapers, people had a huge confidence to build those. You have to be able to build them, and you know you're going to fill them.
That's an interesting point.
And building with confidence is something that we still do sometimes today, even Wisconsin Rapids. So if you look at our $20 million YMCA building, they had to build that with a lot of confidence, and it's really paid off. I think when you aim high, you reach high.
I have to be honest with you, David. I was raised around architecture, and I know it quite well. I come from a city that really promotes and is proud of it and everything. It's a topic that's been on my mind since I was a little kid. I don't think I've ever thought of that angle on it, that part of it, the idea that you're going to build something. It, to me, I'm so focused on the building and the actual structure and all that, I didn't even think about the people part of it. Yeah. Well, if you're going to build this, you got to know you're going to fill it.
Right.
That is an interesting aspect
right.
of it.
And I love the history of Wisconsin Rapids. And one of the first things I did when I arrived in town 15 years ago was I went to the library and I said, where are the local history books? And they told me the Dave Engel books are all over there. So I went and I read almost all of them, and got myself a background in how the city was built. And when we go around the city, we can look at various phases of development that tell the history of our city. So we can see some of the earliest homes here. There's not many of them left, but from the Civil War era. Mm-hmm. There's precious few from before that, perhaps the Wakely House, which is, I think, around 1840.
Yeah.
And then we've got when the lumber mills were really successful in the late 19th century, we had a load of house building there. And then, of course, we had the big mansions. Mm-hmm. And then when the paper mills became successful in the early 20th century, as well as having some of the homes built for the mill owners, we also had a lot of very functional workers' housing. We had some houses built with, you know, really no more than two rooms. They had an outside bathroom and a kitchen and a little area that would be for living and sleeping in. And we see those all over town. And yet some of them have been extended and extended and extended. And they're really nothing like they used to be.
Hmm.
So, yeah, It's the history.
Well, you know, I imagine that there's many factors that comes into a home either kind of surviving, if you will, and kind of being updated or kept around, and ones that just, you know, aren't, or demolished or something like that. So much of it, I imagine, comes down to building materials, certainly ownership and a lot of those things, a lot of many different factors. But it's always interesting to me to see those houses that hang around, that have around for 100 years or what have you or something.
And really the key to it is having a good roof. And where I'm from London, and like the great Chicago fire of 1871, we had a great fire of London in 1666. So if you go right to the center of London, you see no old wooden houses from before 1666. And then after that period, they said, we're not going to build wooden houses anymore. We're going to build them out of brick. Where I'm from the suburbs, and really, people say to me, oh, your houses must be really old because you're from England. Mm-hmm. And some of them are, but where I'm from a part of London that was developed when the railroads moved out in the 1930s. Oh. So because people could then commute to central London for work, they built this whole commuter belt of 1930s homes. And
wow,
really, the house I own in Wisconsin Rapids is older than the house I owned in, wow, in London.
That's interesting.
So it's all to do with the history. And the roof, yes, the roofs in London, you'd usually have two materials. You'd either have tile, which is a ceramic tile, and they usually last about 50 years, or you have slate, and the slate lasts about 100 years. Hmm. I bought my first house in the late 80s, and it had a slate roof, and the house was built in about 1900, and it was just coming to the end of its useful life, and I had to replace it. Hmm. Now here we have a variety of different materials, most common being the asphalt shingle. Hmm. And that you usually have useful life of about 40 years, give or take 10 years.
You know, this isn't necessarily, I know, your wheelhouse, David, but you have a gigantic wheelhouse, so I don't know, maybe it might be in there. But just coming from my world in the construction, from my background in construction, I know that one of the things that we tended to do was looking at other companies and what they were doing, or talking to other foremen and stuff, and kind of figuring out, hey, what do you guys don't know? This works here on this type of sand, especially here in central Wisconsin, where the land can change from just 5 feet away to another 5 feet. Of that, where the idea of maybe learning from each other and sharing information across continents.
Yes.
I don't know how often that happens, but it feels like a really good idea to kind of share that information.
It absolutely is, but you've got to think about the materials available. So if you look at where I'm from in London, there were a lot of areas of natural clay, and that meant that it was very sensible to build ceramic tiles. The slate quarries were elsewhere in the country, but they used to move them through the canals and the railroads to London. Now the other big factor that means you really wouldn't want to put a ceramic tile roof on a house in Wisconsin Rapids is that the roof beams are not made to take that weight. So you don't often see that around here.
You know, David, as we're talking about this topic, I don't mean to get us off into a side avenue here, but it does come back to some other conversations we've had as far as home ownership and when you're looking for a good home. And I don't know how many people, you've brought this up before, and JR has and some others have, but I don't know how many, you know, my fellow citizens, when they're looking at homes, I hear them look up. You know, we don't think about the roof that often. I maybe you hear it more in conversation with actual buyers and stuff, and it's just me that doesn't hear it a lot in random conversations. But I have a friend who just sold a home a little while ago. I have another friend out of state, but another friend who has been looking for a home for a couple of months now. And I have not had one conversation with either of these people or other individuals in the last couple of years that I can think of about roofs. That just is one of the more important factors, I would think, when it comes to purchasing a home. And when you buy a home, you're not buying something that you want to last for a month. You want something that's going to last for a long time.
Yes, and a good roof, a leak-proof roof, is the single most important factor in protecting a building. That's what you often see with historic buildings. The reason that they fall into disrepair and sometimes have to be taken down is that the roof hasn't been maintained. The other option we have here, of course, is metal roofs, mm. where you pay 2 to 3 times more than you pay for your shingle roof, mm. but it could last you 80 years.
Yeah, and I imagine that it certainly depends on the structure, the type of house you have, and what kind of roof you can have when it comes to these materials. But I think we're going more and more towards steel roofs. We're leaning more and more towards that direction.
I think that's partly because when you put a shingle roof on, well, a few years later, you might change it for a steel roof. But if you put a steel roof on, you're never going to go back to a shingle roof.
Right. Yes. Solid point. David, another thing that stands out is the siding and some of that.
Now, this is something that I never knew anything about before I moved to Wisconsin, because our houses don't have siding. When I lived in the UK, somebody told me, I'm going to replace the siding on my garage. I thought, what on earth is a siding? To me, a siding is where a train goes off a railroad track to park for the night.
Yeah, yeah.
So we just don't have them because our exteriors are weatherproof. So typically you'd have a brick exterior, or if a house is built now in London, you'd usually build it with cinder block and then there'd be a brick facing. So they're all weatherproof. You don't put anything on top of that. The other construction method that you might use is you might build something with maybe a rougher, cheaper brick, and then you would often put rendering on. Mm. And sometimes you put pebble dash on the rendering. Mm. But all those things are weatherproof.
Right. Whereas here, not only do we have to worry about certain weather, which, you know, obviously you do in England as well, but here we lean so much into, okay, I want my house to look good as well. I'm not saying that you don't have this obviously in England, but here image is such a big deal. And I think that comes into play as well, as long with also having your house be able to handle any type of weather.
Oh, absolutely. And the opportunity to renew your siding really means you can change the whole look of the house and really make it look completely fresh and new.
A lot of people too, especially new homeowners, this is one of the ways they do this, of kind of making the house their own. I hear this a lot from homeowners, you know, especially if you're buying a house that was maybe in the family, or you knew about this house in your neighbor, you know, your community for a long time, and now you're owning that house. But you want to make it your own. You want to do certain things to kind of, whether it's a new paint job, or it's just the inside of the house that you completely redecorate. That is a big deal to people, especially with some of these older, more established houses.
Right. And the other thing you can do is you can change your shingle color. Like many people in the area, I've just had hail damage to my roof, and they gave me a bewildering range of shingles to choose from. and I just said to my wife, well, you pick.
Smart man. Very smart move. We're speaking with David Farnborough, and let's talk real estate with our great friends at Coldwell Banker Sear Realtors. One of the things that David and I are discussing is the differences of London and Wisconsin homes. But if I can go out west for a second, David, when I moved out and was living in California, I was, again, an architecture kid. I was blown away by the way that in California, they don't really tear down buildings. They kind of just repurpose them. And a lot of them are those adobe kind of like, you know, Mexican influenced kind of houses and infrastructure and everything. It's really cool to see. But the thing that threw me, I go over to my friend's house. We're hanging out, and his parents were in the living room, and we weren't going to go in the living room and hang out. We'll go to the basement. I was like, there's no basement, man. What are you talking about? We don't have basements in California. Right. And I was blown away. I'm like in my mid-20s, and I did not know this. I didn't realize. So basements has got to be quite a difference between London and Wisconsin as well. While we have basements here, they vary around the world.
They do. And a lot of it's to do with the weather. So we have tornadoes here. So it has been useful historically to have a basement. Nowadays, a lot of people in Wisconsin are building homes on slabs. So they don't have a basement, but they do build themselves a safe room. It doesn't have to be very large, but just something that can act as a tornado shelter. Mm. We don't have tornadoes in the UK. Mm. We don't have really very much at all in the line of severe weather. Mm. When I was growing up, our house had a very small cellar, and it was the only one in the street that had that, because it was built by the builder. The builder built the whole street, and he built one house for himself, and he put a little cellar in. And the cellar was no bigger than this room that we're in now. It's probably about, I don't know, 15 feet by 12 feet. Yeah. And my dad had a workbench there, and there was a hole that the coal was poured down. But that was really unusual. Most suburban homes in England do not have a they don't have a basement. They do have a foundation, and it's a different sort of construction from here. There's often a lot of aggregate and concrete poured in. But if you go to central London, you do find basements. And the reason for that is that space is at much more of a premium. And if you can get another floor by digging down, then you're going to do that. So if you go shopping in central London, you'll often see down that there's another floor. And those shops and buildings sometimes are many more floors high. Typically, a home in England, you just got your main floor and an upper floor.
One of the things that we talk about that comes up a lot in conversation with Let's Talk Real Estate with our friends at Coldwell Bankruptcy or Realtors over the years is inventory and needing more inventory, more homes. You mentioned that a lot of some houses nowadays are being built on slabs without the basement. Do you think that could lead to more inventory if you don't have to even worry about a basement to make, that you're just building the upstairs, the upper home and everything, that we might get more homes this way?
I think it would be nice, but I don't think it's a significant factor in the cost of construction. Yeah. I think it's often a personal choice. I've shown homes to a lot of people who say they will only buy a home with a basement.
Yeah, I believe it. Just curious, just a random question here. Is there a lot of flooding in England, in London in particular? Do they deal with flooding a lot?
No, because in the 1980s, we put a flood barrier up. So the River Thames is a huge river, and it runs probably three quarters of the width of England, and it flows out to the North Sea. And it is tidal because it's so big, it has a tide. It's a river with a tide. And at some point in the 80s, they built a huge barrier up there which prevents flooding. And when the waters get up to a certain height, these big giant silver domes sort of flip over, and the
Very cool, and
London's protected.
I gotta look into that. That sounds awesome.
You do have flooding in the country and in other towns, but it's not really a factor in London anymore.
Very interesting, David. What about garages? How do those differ between the countries?
Well, this is something which there are commonalities, but one of the big problems you have in London is space. So the last house I lived in was built in the 1930s, and nobody owned cars, so they didn't put a garage there. There was a space to park in the street, but that was all you could do. Now, we don't get the snow over there that we get here, and so you don't have to worry about, you know, maybe we get a couple of inches, you know, once or twice a year. So a lot of homes are built without garages, and if you had one that was built with one in the 30s, it meant that you were a pretty well-to-do family, you know, sort of upper middle class. Any home that's built now, they will put one or two garage spaces there.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because people want it. They demand it. The buyers demand it, really. If you build apartments in the centre of London, then you almost always have underground parking.
Interesting. What about the years of construction? How about that part of this?
So if you're looking at, like I said, where I'm from, London was built over many thousands of years, but a lot of the early buildings were swept away in the fire in the centre, and then they changed their attitude to building after that big event. When you're looking at the buildings in the outskirts, they were influenced by the spread of transport links. So I mentioned the 1930s railroad expansion, but there was also another big railroad boom in the late 1890s. So you'll see huge areas where there were homes built in, you know, the whole neighborhood was built in 1898 or 1902. And then you find other neighborhoods where it's all 1920s or 1930s. And then you'll find a big gap because of the war. And then you'll find after the war, houses were very, very cheap, very functional. People didn't really have the money. And then there was another big housing boom in the 80s. And people started to build on fields. Mm-hmm. Now, by this point, people were building in the areas that were accessible by the motor car. Mm-hmm. So we had these big roads that spanned all around the edge of London, and they would develop all those fields that the roads were next to with these modern 1980s housing. And it's just continued since then.
It's very interesting. David, we got about 2-3 minutes left. I wanted to talk about yards and get into that, how the difference of the yards in London compared to here in Wisconsin. You mentioned not a lot of room in London.
Yeah, that's right. And we see it here. When we're in the city of Wisconsin Rapids, we'll see a city yard. And I've seen some city yards down by the river, which only 0.11 acres. And that means you've probably just got room to let your dog out, and that's about it. Mm. And I've seen some yards here, you know, there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 acres. So here in Rapids, it depends whether you're in the center of the city or whether you're in the outskirts.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much like that in England. But London is so populous, you've got 8 or 9 million people, that there's such a huge percentage of the population live there. You know, there's only about 66 million people in total.
I never really thought of that.
It's a huge percentage of the population actually live in London.
Yeah.
And generally, we would have something like an average size city yard. So it would be something like 0.2 or 0.25 of an acre for a London house. Some of them don't have any yard. And, you know, you open your front door and you're on the street.
Yeah, that's wild. It sounds a little familiar to my old stomping grounds a little bit, actually, but it's quite interesting and really gives us a lot more questions, honestly, for both countries and follow-up, because we're going to have to come back to this topic one day, because this is a fun topic.
It would be nice, too. Yeah, I thought it would be interesting, and I thought it would make a change from saying that houses in Wisconsin Rapids have gone up by 7%.
Right. So, yeah, it's a great idea. It's very good. David, if people have follow-up questions, not only about our topics today, but other ones, and want to know more, how can they reach you?
Well, they can call me or text me on 715-323-8594, or they can message me through Facebook Messenger. I have a realtor page. You can find me pretty easily. It's David Farnborough Realtor.
And you can find out more at coldwellbanker.com. Be sure to bookmark that page, coldwellbanker.com. Follow them on social media. Looking forward to talking again next month, David. Have a great day today.
Thank you. You too.
More Let's Talk Real Estate next month right here at Midday Magazine on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.